Welcome to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. I started this show to talk about all of the interesting, complex, paradoxical, and sometimes uncomfortable aspects of the human experience. If you get anything from this show, the greatest compliment you could give me is to share this show with somebody that you think the message may resonate with, or to head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Additionally, if you want to interact with me, you can follow me at @RickAlexander_ on Instagram. Without further ado, on to the show. Wednesday. Welcome to Morning Coffee with Rick Alexander. I want to kick today off with a little bit of housekeeping news just to keep you guys abreast of the show. So I'm recording this during my morning coffee time on Wednesday morning. And so I think that going forward, this is how I'm going to record the lion's share of the shows, minus probably the interview style shows, of course, because those are kind of different depending on time. What that means for you guys is that the day that I do a show, it won't be available until probably like noon on the East Coast. But I think I probably have so many of them that for you that do regularly follow, there's always something you can catch up on or more you can listen to, even on days where I haven't released a show yet. But as I've been, you know, struggling with a rhythm, you know, for a while I did a show every single day, and I really did enjoy it. And I found it in some ways to be easier than doing only a couple of shows a week, because it's like I always kept my mind in this place where I was looking for these angles and working on this content. So all that to say, I'm going to continue doing the show as I am in the mornings, like literally during my morning coffee time, where I think my bandwidth is the most fresh and I can offer the audience the most of me. And that being said, I also am not going to record a show if I don't have anything valuable, I think, to say. So as long as I have a show, I will do one. And I don't know how regular or unregular that will be, but I know lately I just have content that feels like it's just pouring out of me. So I have a ton of shows in mind. And so that'll be the way that we do this going forward. Also, right now, I've said this a few times on here, I'm rewriting Ambitious Heroes and Heartache. I'm going to release a revised edition this fall. And with that being said, I've also released the audiobook of Ambitious Heroes and Heartache. So I've been talking about this all week. So this week I said I was going to do some samplings from the audiobook. Today I'm actually going to read it in real time just so that I can talk about some of the points as they come up instead of just releasing a chapter. And then, of course, in the show notes of this episode, I will have where you can find the audiobook on Audible if, you know, if you're interested in it or if the ideas kind of grip you in any way. So today I'm taking this passage from a chapter called Love, Money, and Culture. I'm actually in the rewrite process of this chapter right now. It's not going to change a lot as far as premise, though, because this is one of my favorite chapters I've ever written. And, you know, I originally wrote this piece I'm going to read today for REI. And as you listen to it, you'll find out why they decided not to run this article. We'll talk about that at the end. But I started with a quote that said, you know, average American makes $74,600 per year. The two largest chunks of the average American budget comes from housing and transportation. That's $18,186 and $9,049 respectively. And I took that from 2018 U.S. Census data. So given my current age, my past income, and my net worth, I estimate that I've spent roughly $1.15 million in my lifetime. If I look at every trip I've ever been on, every gym membership I've ever had, every road trip I've spontaneously embarked upon, every ski trip, etc., from the roughly $1.1 million, I've spent at most $180,000 on experiences or things that I've done. So I'm talking about lifetime spending here. The reason that it's important is because if I look back and inventory my life, just about every single moment that I can actually remember was due to one of those experiences. So for those of you keeping track, that's 100% of worthwhile memories I've had, coming from less than 16% of the money I've made. To put it differently, I've spent roughly 86% of my money on things that don't matter and that I'll never remember. The truth is that the main narrative in our society is driven by genius marketers that would have you believe that buying something is actually akin to doing something. Think back to all the commercials that you've seen. Every single one is an empty promise of an experience that you most likely won't have, and if you do, certainly won't be solely because of the purchase. Cue the extremely effective Nissan X-Terra commercials. Did anyone actually believe that they would live a life of adventure because they bought a $34,000 SUV with a built-in $40 first aid kit? On some level, they certainly did, albeit a subconscious one. The best adventures that I've had, personally, were all derived while on foot. The car that I drove to the trailhead was irrelevant. Our society encourages consumption, and like anyone who has tried to kick an addiction knows, overcoming that is actually a lot more difficult than you might think. You have to consciously pay attention to your decisions and what's driving them. More importantly, as stated earlier, you have to find an even more productive replacement for your time once it is no longer filled with empty promises. The consumerism is actually just an extension of our perpetual desire for something beyond ourselves to make us feel whole. As you walk around the store, for example, what you see is 1,000 taglines that promise you a feeling. What they don't tell you is that the feeling is derived from your brain chemistry in a way that's going to leave you wanting more of that feeling. Ask yourself if what you are doing now and what you're about to finance will matter if you're lucky enough at the end to reflect and look back on your life. Like it or not, we have a finite amount of time attached to our lives, so you should think seriously about how yours is spent. One of the biggest tragedies of all time resides in the fact that we push people to trade their time for dollars, and then push them further to trade those dollars for things instead of a better time. I find it difficult to see the nobility in the rat race when that's the outcome. And so perhaps it's time to start moving the needle in a meaningful direction and rerouting funds toward a life that matters. Although some of our spending is inevitable, you know, food, shelter, clothing, etc., I have found it better to minimize those things as they won't matter in 10 years anyway. What will matter is the trip that you take across the country for a girl or guy you think that you may have chemistry with, the nights you never slept contemplating life with a friend, or the donation of your time or money that you made to help someone else's rough times get just a little bit easier. All of these provide a chemical release known as serotonin, which is linked to long-term happiness and satisfaction. Compare that with retail therapy, which provides a short hit of the neurotransmitter we've already explored in this book, known as dopamine. Dopamine gives you momentary happiness, and as many of us have found out the hard way, some sort of buyer's remorse often follows it. The system works because by the time you get stuck with the bill after the feel-good chemicals have subsided, there will be 1,000 other things for you to sink your hope into the promises of a return. The system works because by the time you get stuck with the bill, and after the feel-good chemicals have subsided, there will be 1,000 other things for you to sink your hope into that promises a return of that feeling. And so what I'm getting at here is this is how the cycle continues, right? It's like people promise you a feeling. They say, well, listen, you'll be better if you can buy this. And so you picture yourself there, and you're like, I'll do it, and then you buy it. And right as the new car smell fades, you start to realize, like, wait, I'm still me. I'm back here. I'm dealing with all the same human struggles I was dealing with before I bought this car. What's going on? And so then when you have this moment, you're given an opportunity to reflect inward. By the way, I'm not reading right now. This is me just talking to you guys. But you have this moment to look inward and say, where could I reroute my funds? You know, it's lunacy for us to continue living in these cycles. But what happens is we look out in the world, and the next marketer, the next charlatan, the next religious leader, the next, you know, call it guru, the next whatever it is there to say, hey, listen, well, if you can go this way, maybe you need to buy this. Maybe you need to invest in yourself, right? All of these are maybes, and maybe you don't, right? Maybe you need to inventory your life and figure out what's going to make you happy and stop spending money on things that aren't that. So let's jump back into the book here. The truth is that each of us were born to contend with the unknown and the wild, and our brain chemistry supports that never-ending evolution. An unexpected side effect of consumerism is found in the fact that you can now recreate the chemical reaction on demand. The same type of feelings you get when you're pushing into the unknown are now found in things that will keep you profoundly stuck. Not only will you not be pushing into the unknown, evolving yourself and your character, but you're likely to find yourself not doing much of anything at all. The truth is that humans were meant to not only face the unknown, but to stand in it. Humans spend their lives seeking the constant balance that allows them to flow freely between the routines and habits of their constructed world and the evolution that is often forged on the frontiers of that world. This mode of being isn't only driven by the heart, as you see with excessive dreamers or spiritual seekers. Each of us is internally wired to tame the chaos and live with a constant hunger to do so. So at the beginning of that, I said the truth is that each of us were born to contend with the unknown and the wild. What I mean by that is our brain is constructed in a way, our psychological constructs are created in a way that help us navigate this world of known and unknown, order and chaos. And so what happens is when we do that correctly, we get this feeling of flow. We're standing in the middle of what we know. We're also simultaneously exploring that which we don't know. We are rewarded for that with a subjective feeling of meaning. And it's worth mentioning that you could also just do drugs, right? You could also just drink alcohol. And so this is what's happening. Here's what's interesting. When you're doing this, you're glowing these dopaminergic pathways. Glowing's not right. You're lighting up these dopaminergic pathways that are mimicking what would happen if, in fact, you were standing on the middle of chaos and order. But since you're not, right, and since we don't always know how to maintain that in our life, we turn to things that mimic that brain chemistry. That's what I'm getting at right here. So the truth is that we haven't been around very long and we're still evolving at an expansive rate. We're just far too close to ourselves to see how any of our newest lifestyle modifications will play out in the long term. Eventually, the masses will become aware of the best way to integrate the synthetic and real. But we may have to go through a few generations of people handling it poorly. I would imagine that the people who discovered fire weren't expert cooks right away. Same thing goes with new tech such as social media and consumerism. It often takes multiple generations to see how something will truly play out. To revisit an earlier example, if you were born in Germany in 1930, by the time you hit high school, you would most likely feel as if the world was going to hell in a handbasket. The closer to Nazi hell you became, the harder it would be to pull your perspective away and realize you were living through just a wrinkle in time, and that's concerning one of the greatest atrocities in recorded history. What you want to remember is that evolution doesn't move backwards. Progress, truth, love, and light always prevail. You guys have heard me say that before. If they haven't, then you are in the part of the story where they haven't yet. No more. This is relevant now because I'm extremely optimistic about where we are headed. My current sentiment may seem hypercritical of our current culture, but it's only because I know we can do better. Our innate narcissism was ignited with consumerism, and then social media threw fuel in the fire. With every day that goes by, however, we are awakening to the fact that there's a better way to be. The pendulum always swings back. The only thing I want to say about that passage right there is that most of my work is built around critiques of societal constructs. And I think that if I'm not careful, I fall into a shadow there and I talk about society in such a negative way that it's hard for me to see the light. But the truth is, if I'm being unbiased, the individual and the society, they have, you know, we have obligations to each other. And I think that one of those obligations looks like society supporting the growth of the individual, giving them the room to grow in an authentic way. And then the individual then gives back their gifts to society. And if we were to learn to live in that way, I think we could progress further. And so the reason that I critique it is because, like I said, I just think we can do better. We won't always believe that bigger is better, more is better, and better is just better. Eventually, enough of us will challenge that line of thinking and things will settle into a better balance. What if you were to take a minute, amidst the chaos of no money down financing, money back guarantees, and holiday sales, and just ask yourself how your life might actually be better? What do you need beyond what people tell you that you need? That's where your focus and effort will reward you with contentment and well-being. What might you be free to pursue or try if you decided that the dream of Western culture concerning ownership didn't necessarily match your own? When you add up the cost of the typical American dream, you're most likely looking at going into debt for both college and then a mortgage. Between the two, you have an obligated payment for the next 30 years, typically to the tune of $250,000 or more. With that type of commitment, what kind of options do you have if you want to pivot in your career, start that dream business, or travel to the place you've always wanted to? Of course, you always have the option to live differently, but your freedom certainly won't be aided by the world of consumerism. At a minimum, perhaps a better question might be, what if you prioritize the destination over the vehicle that got you there? We grip tightly to our things and our ideas, believing that letting them go somehow correlates to letting part of ourselves go. What we often fail to understand is that this is exactly what is happening, only it should be celebrated instead of resisted. We're letting go of the smallest parts of ourselves, the parts that subconsciously believe we should place our hope in material only to realize over and over again that the hope is not lasting. Usually our temporary uptick in happiness fades long before the new car smell. What we're left with is a payment obligation and a lifestyle promise that was never kept. Your human experience will be maximized if you shove back against what tries to dictate your behavior. You don't have to have an appetite for rebellion, just a strong desire to live more fully and to feel more deeply. Spend your money on the things that actually make you feel alive. Whatever that might be for you in particular, you can rest assured that it will inevitably be where desperation, disconnection, and dissonance cease to exist. The last little thought I had about this is, you know, one of the critiques I make quite a bit is on the American dream. But I obviously, like, if you want a house or whatever, get a house. I read, though, that the average, like, 750 credit score costs something like a couple hundred thousand dollars to maintain. And so you can kind of take a step back and look and realize, like, a lot of these are just self-propagating systems, right? They rely on our buy-in, and as we continue to buy in, they get to continue to dictate the rules. And so I think one of the ways that we can take personal power back in our lives is if we just sort of, you know, slam on the e-brake for a second, pause, and just look around and make sure, you know, is this the direction that I want to go? You know, when I was buying my first house, every single person that I talked to was like congratulating me, telling me what a great job it was, like a great deal it was and a great opportunity and how great it was that I was finally becoming a homeowner. And so, you know, I didn't question it. I was just like, okay, so this is, you know, this is the thing, I guess, right? And so I bought this house. It's like, this is a good investment. Here's what I would draw your attention to. Maybe, right? It might be a good investment over the long term. It also might not be. Now, if I were to go to you and I said, listen, I've got a business, it's almost a sure thing, right? But I need you to pay me $300,000 for that business in order to maintain it, but you'll get a return over the long term, I promise. Now, your brain chemistry, what you would be thinking is, well, maybe, right? Let me talk to some people. Because if you go to the bank and you say, hey, this guy's got a good business opportunity, I need $300,000. And the bank says, okay, well, here you go. Here's your interest rate. Just understand that by the time you get it paid off, it'll be about $970,000. These are real numbers, by the way, on my first house, if you were to pay it off over the course of the 30 years. And so my point is that that was the business opportunity, you would be like, whoa, Phil, everybody stop. Let me figure out what's going on here. But because the people around you, because consensus reality tells you that that's the thing to do as an adult, we tend not to question it as deeply. And so again, I don't critique these things to say that we should reject them altogether. That would be an absolutist mentality, and almost nothing in the world is ever absolute. But it's worth mentioning that perhaps all of these decisions that consensus reality aids us in making, perhaps we could take a step back from those and just ask ourselves, you know, long term, is this where I'm headed? Is this where I'm going? Let's enter into our lives consciously. You know, that's what waking up is. And the breakdown of this consensus reality that we're experiencing right now, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, I did a podcast on it, but just, you know, this idea that nobody agrees on anything anymore. And reality is fundamentally when you and I agree on something, like that's our definition of reality, and enough people have to agree on what is, right? And so since so many people disagree on what is, masks aren't good for you, there is no racist problem, right? There's no consensus reality about what actually is. Now, the breakdown of consensus reality, what that means is that we have an obligation as conscious adults to enter into the things that we do with full awareness. That way we can say that at the end, at least we chose our lives. And that's all I'm trying to get at with this. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this. Again, if you did, you can check out the audiobook on Amazon or audible.com or at the link in the show notes of this episode. Oh, and so obviously the reason REI did not want to publish this article was simply because they're a consumeristic company. They're trying to sell people things. And I thought, man, you know what would be great if I wrote an article for the store and told people to stop buying stuff because they could have an adventure of a life without buying anything at all. So you can imagine they didn't run it, and now it's in my book. I love you guys. Have an amazing hump day. We'll talk later on Morning Coffee.